Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Frank Film Club. I'm Maisie Williams and I'm an actor and producer.
I'm Larry Roberts and I'm a producer and filmmaker.
I'm Hannah Marie Williams and I'm a casting director.
And welcome to our club.
Hello everybody, welcome back to Frank Film Club. I'm Lowry, this is Maisie, this is Hannah. And this week we are going to be talking about Poor Things, which is a new film directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. I'm going to give you a little quick synopsis. Mm-hmm. So brought back to life by an unorthodox scientist, a young woman runs off with a lawyer on a whirlwind adventure across the continents. Free from the prejudices of her times, she grows steadfast in her purpose to stand out, to stand for equality and liberation. It stars Emma Stone, Rami Youssef, Willem Dafoe and Mark Ruffalo. And I'm just very excited to talk about it with you both. But first of all, how are you both doing?
I'm good. I just had some lunch.
Great.
Which was really amazing. I had a toasty and it made me feel warm inside. And now I have a tea and I'm ready to talk about Poor Things.
Great. I'm glad that you're warm because it's actually really cold where we are at the moment. But I'm generally good. Mm-hmm. Just ticking along with things, you know?
Yeah.
Things seem to be happening in life.
Great. Wow. I'm
the
so
most
glad.
Non-update we could have possibly have given.
Yeah. Wow. That really escalated from zero to 100 there. So thanks. Moving swiftly on to Poor Things, which I'm so excited to talk about.
We've started weird. We'll carry on.
It's Yorgos Lanthimos week. I mean, yeah.
What else are we going to do?
What else have I been doing?
Yeah. So, Poor Things. I don't know if you know, but it's based on a book of the same name by a Scottish author called Alistair Gray. But it was adapted for screen by Tony McNamara. Mm. Don't know if I'm saying his name right. He's an Australian writer who was a writer on The Favourite. He wrote Cruella as well. So he's like worked with Yorgos and Emma Stone multiple times before. But yeah, what did you think? What are your initial thoughts?
I absolutely love Yorgos Lanthimos. I loved Killing of a Sacred Deer. What was the Greek film that he did before? Dogtooth. Yeah, Dogtooth. Dogtooth if you're Welsh. I just absolutely love all his films. And I feel like the more budget he's being given, the more he's stepping up rather than sometimes you can see these really quirky directors who've got like a special stamp. And they kind of fall down a little bit when they get given a bit of budget. But oh my God, he just keeps on leveling up. And Poor Things for me is probably just in a different way. But I absolutely loved it. It's such a perfect mix of all different elements of storytelling, meaning, message, casting, production, design, costume. Everything just works so beautifully together for me. And I adore this film.
Yeah, I've got to say the same. I think the visuals really like sealed this as one of my favorite films of recent times. Mm. And I know that that's really shallow, but it is what means a lot to me in movies. And of course, those things never hit quite as gracefully if I feel the story is like lacking or the characters are lacking, which they are not in this film at all. But like the wardrobe, the hair, like for those images alone, I'm obsessed with this film and I've like never seen anything like it. And he's just like done it again. You know, it's like kind of a bit of a switch up in his style in some ways, but I think it's really a special film and also can't wait to talk about the story and the meaning as well. Cause I think we're going to have good chats about that too.
Yeah, completely agree on both of those. I felt like at first when it started, cause it's obviously like a bit strange and weird. It all starts in black and white, doesn't it?
Mm.
And I was a bit like, oh, is this going to be a little bit slower than what I was expecting it to be? And then really, really quickly, it like is not that at all. Mm-hmm. And I was hooked and had so much fun. And I'm actually really excited to go and watch it again.
Yeah, me too. On the big, big, big screen. Because we all watched it on a screener.
Yeah.
So we would love to see this on the big screen.
True. I feel like, it feels like one that should be seen on the big screen. For sure. Well, I'm going to give you a bit of a background about how the film came about.
Mm-hmm.
So Yorgos read the book in around 2011 or like a bit before that. Then he met the author Alistair in 2011. And then Alistair was like, yeah, I like you. I'd be happy for you to have the rights to the book. And then at that point, Yorgos hadn't made an English language film yet. He'd just made Alps, which was his film after Dogtooth.
Wow.
I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was working with Element Pictures, who is Ed Guinea and Andrew Lowe. And they had, so this like jumped to 2016. They had, joined up with Yorgos to start work on The Favourite.
Mm.
And that was, going to be their first film that they were going to do together. But because it took so long to develop, and it's, it needed a big budget, in the meantime, Yorgos pitched The Lobster, and then they made that. And then The Favourite still didn't take off because of schedule. I think Olivia Colman and Emma Stone it didn't work out scheduling wise. So then he pitched Killing of a Sacred Deer and they made that in the meantime. And then they finally got to The Favourite. That obviously did amazing. Mm-hmm. And then because that did so well, he was able to get the bigger budget and then make Poor Things. And then Poor Things was kind of always in the background throughout all of those other films, which I think is really cool that I bet that happens quite often that people a filmmaker will have that aim and do all these other things, which will eventually make that massive thing happen.
That's so cool and kind of funny because I was like, this film feels like it's really switching it up for him, but actually this is a movie that he's wanted to make for so long. So, but cool that it's made finally and nice that it kind of took this long because he got the budget and he spent it well and it does look really wicked. Mm-hmm. And maybe it would have been kind of a different vibe if he had made it earlier in his career.
Well, maybe that's also why everything feels so together, even though everything's so fantastical. Because for me, obviously, as you know, I find it quite hard to be sucked into a world that is quite fantastical and not really easily placed. I like to really understand who things are and where things come from.
Mm-hmm.
But this maybe feels different for me because it was so well developed. Maybe he had such a long time to think about all these different elements and all the detail in them that it needed all of that time. What was the budget?
Can I get some guesses?
Oh, God.
25?
60.
35 million.
Oh.
Yeah. And I've also did a bit of research on his previous films' budgets as well.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I just wanted to see how he had leveled up every time. Can we do some guesses on The Favourite?
25.
20.
15.
Wow.
So he really did level up there. And yeah. I couldn't find Killing of a Sacred Deer, but The Lobster was 4 million.
Wow.
And then Dogtooth was 250,000 euro.
Cool.
Wow.
Love
it.
So he's really has leveled up, which I think is really cool. And I think that he has done it, not only has he leveled up in budget, he makes the most of the budget that he has.
Yeah.
It's just an incredible storyteller.
It feels like, so when we were talking about Everything Everywhere All at Once on our previous series, if you haven't watched that episode, then go ahead and watch it now. But in that, we were talking about stretching a small budget to do really crazy visual effects and the way that the Daniels kind of just chose, instead of trying to make everything photorealistic, they just chose to make everything kind of heightened and crazy because they could do it for cheaper and just embrace the way that is, because there's nothing worse than seeing a budget not quite stretched to cater for the visual effects that it needs to like tell the story. And there's so many parts of this film that are obviously green screened or like, you know, obviously propped. Oh, well, that's what it feels like anyway. But because there's this style to it that's like future, I don't know, there's this style to it that looks... You have to just say now.
Well, yeah, so I'd also presumed that so much of it is green screen.
Yeah.
It's not. So first of all, the studios, they were shot this in the biggest studio in Budapest.
Ah.
And so their actual location, like they built, you know, when they go to Lisbon, they built all...
it's all set.
It's all set and you could walk like from a room into the street out into another building, like...
Like all fully, painted?
On, or so LED? So they're all painted and then LED screens they use instead of green screens.
Wow.
It was usually, so like the sea when they're on the boat, that's LED screens, which I never knew.
Love.
I never knew that that was a thing.
I did a shoot recently and they had LED with, what do you call that software? Unreal Engine.
Oh.
And they make worlds and then put it on the LED screen so that your the actors are in the space and they can see what,
yeah.
It's amazing.
Mad.
Wow.
Oh my God, I would love to, like for... I think that's like must be the most fun way to do it.
Yeah.
Really cool. So yeah, what were you gonna say?
Well, I guess then what I would pivot and say, what I was trying to say is like rather than building a photorealistic world where the sea is water and the, you know, whatever, like he's embraced this new style to create these sets that the where the lights are impossibly bright and the skies are impossibly pink and yeah, to kind of, I don't know, just instead of trying to make it look like what it's like when you look with your eyes, which is so hard to imitate and recreate, like he's just created something brand new. And I think that's cool.
Mm. Yeah. And the way that he seems to work with all of his HODs is like he'll give them a reference. Like, so for the, there was two production designers on it, one that focused on the big, on the big sets, and then the other one was doing more like the decorations inside it. And for both of them, they'd had various references, but one of the main reference that they referred to was a Hieronymus Bosch painting.
Mm.
And they like, if they were like, oh, don't know if the, what he's thinking, they would like always look back to this one painting. And then, and I didn't really know much of Bosch's work until looking at this. And then I was like, oh yeah, you can totally see that. And then the costume designer, her reference that she was given by Yorgos was a pair of inflatable trousers, and that was it. And then she went away and found all sorts after that. And yeah,
love,
really cool. And I think he then just like lets them go away and do it. Even with the writer, he was like, "You just go adapt it." The writer was Tony was like, came to Yorgos one day and was like, "I'm really struggling. Like I don't really this is really hard, this bit's really hard," and Yorgos is just like, just keep going, it's going to be worth it. And he just like really gives them the freedom, and it obviously just works that he just gives them that like autonomy,
yeah,
like, yeah, over their own role. And yeah, I just think it's incredible.
I think by the sounds of that, that's how he works with actors as well, that he gives them really minimal direction or minimal things to go off and helps them find it their own way. With the way that he directs, is that?
I think so. Well? Yeah, because they do a month prep. I presume that he's done this on his other films, but it was a month prep, and they all the actors get together, but they're not going through the scenes or any of the lines. It's just all about movement. They just play theatre games, and it's just like getting to know each other and getting really silly with each other. And yeah, so then by the time that they come to set, they're just like really comfortable and can be ridiculous. Speaking of which, what, like, who did you love? What did you love character-wise? Like, yeah.
Bark. Wee. that does feel like a theatre game. The whole, first 10 minutes of this film when Emma is being, like, a adult baby does feel like a big theatre game, improvisation game. I thought that her performance was really, really wicked. At the beginning, I was like really struggling to get on board, and I'm a huge fan of Emma's work, and I always have been, and there's every single thing she's done I've really loved. And then when I sat down to watch it, and I was like, oh my God, do I not love it? You know, I was like panicking a little bit that I wasn't going to love it. But it's just something you kind of have to break through. Like, it is just a quirk of the film, and like, you have to just get on board with it. And I felt as soon as I mean, it passed after only a couple of minutes. And then I just, found her so entertaining. And I mean, all of the characters, actually. I thought Mark Ruffalo's accent was questionable, but
I thought it was so, I as soon as he started talking, I was like, oh, no. And then I was like, oh my God, I love it.
Yeah. Because he is kind of, I don't know, sleazy and a bit of a caricature anyways. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I struggled with it, but
I was really intrigued why the whole lead cast was American and not British, when this is like a very heightened version of, like, Willem Dafoe is Scottish. Yeah. Emma Stone is from London. Mark Ruffalo is this British accent.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that the actors were. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, I know one of the casting associates, and I asked her, was there like a reason why all of the actors were American? Is it because Yorgos Lanthimos is trying to do this like thing about Britain being like this heightened version of like people pretending to be British? And but anyway, she didn't reply. But what I was going to say was, I also felt the same way about Emma Stone, but even from the trailer, I was like, oh, I don't know, because I'm not really into older actors playing. I think it's so easy to get wrong, older actors playing like very young or, you know, that kind of demeanor. But it wasn't until I completely got swept away with the performance. It wasn't until, though, I saw Margaret Qualley trying to do a very similar character towards the end that I was like, Emma Stone is incredible, what she's done with that performance. Because Margaret Qualley's amazing. But if we had watched a whole film of Margaret Qualley trying to be this young-brained woman, it would have been so awkward and uncomfortable, even though she's great.
Yeah, that's really so true.
Yeah, I felt completely the same in that first bit. And I think it might be something to do with, like, maybe at the start, she's not as good. And it does actually get better, because she broke the character down into five different stages, based on age. And it's like, maybe she did just struggle with that really, really young part of it, which, like, of course you would, because like you say, it's like, how does any adult do that and look normal? It's not normal, but then I was also a bit like, I don't know how I feel about this, and then was relieved when I was like, no, it works now.
Yeah. I think at like one point, Rami Youssef's character, whose name I'm gonna forget.
Oh.
He's like researching her, and I think he says she learns about 16 new words a day, which was kind of all we were given, and she has a couple of like speech lessons, but there was a little part of me that was like, and now all of a sudden she can talk, like, you know. And it's just something like that. It doesn't really matter, it's not integral to the story, but like, if you're gonna do something that's so bold and like, then I just feel like there's got to be like a real graduation to it. And like, by the end, she was like just fully talking, which is like how it should be. But there was still something about that felt jarring to me. I don't know. It's not important, because that's not the point of the story. It's more about like her like naivety and like her experience in the world that's growing and progressing. And it doesn't really matter how it's reflected in the speech. But yeah, just because at the beginning it's like a baby talking. It's like, I don't know, it feels like there has to. Maybe I'm just being.
I know what you mean. Yeah. It was just off at times.
But as soon as she's like in Lisbon in her sunglasses, I was just like, this is the greatest film of all time. She is so cool. I'm obsessed. The shoulder pads and her hair. Her hair. That is like the most gorgeous. I feel like we're going to see a lot of Halloween costumes of this look. I'm dressing up as her for Halloween next year, that's for sure.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Can we jump back to Mark Ruffalo?
Yes.
Yes.
Because I was also the same, like, okay, accent is so off, but then I was like, but I haven't watched many things that he's been in, but anything that I have seen him in has been pretty, like, unexciting. So to see him in this, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then I was obviously doing loads of research about, like, how did he come into it and how did he find it? He was so nervous the whole time, to the point where, when they started, maybe it was when they were in prep, or maybe he was attached and then he read the script. Anyway, he basically tried to talk himself out of the role with Yorgos because he just didn't think that he could do it. And I think he was just, like, massively insecure about the role the whole time, and, like, knew that he wasn't getting the accent right, and, like, was just, like, quite embarrassed. And then when they were in prep for that month, Oscar Isaacs was also shooting something in the same studio, and there was, like, an ongoing joke that the plan was to get Oscar Isaacs in to take Mark's place because he was, like, just doing really badly. And, yeah, bless him, he just, like, was really nervous.
Aww. But his performance isn't self-conscious. So did he
no.
Did he feel better?
I guess so. I think, like, in between some takes, he'd, like, be doing it as he does, and then it would finish, and then he'd be like, oh, my God, I'm like, whoa. So... Yeah, I think is so bizarre. I thought he was so good.
I was just going to say, there's another performance in this as well that was really surprising, because I've not seen Mark Ruffalo do anything like this before, and I loved seeing him like that. But the guy that plays her original, Chris Abbott.
Yes.
I've never seen him do a role like that before. And yeah. I thought he was brilliant.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, why do I know him? Why do I know him? Girls.
Girls.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah.
Really liked that. Also, loved Catherine Hunter.
Same.
At the brothel, the owner of the brothel.
Yeah, so good.
Oh my God, she was incredible. Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The last one.
No.
Oh.
Like the fifth.
Oh. I'm not a super fan. Can I say, I really feel for Mark Ruffalo, having heard that story, but I think that that's all I can see when I'm watching his performance.
You really weren't
performance.
A fan of you?
No,
really?
I think I really was like, even he like is absolutely hating every word coming out of his mouth.
Wow, that's so interesting that you saw that and you are an actor and like... I didn't see that at all.
Yeah, it's just like, it was so distracting in a way. Wait, what did I just say? But this is so interesting hearing that you both loved it, because that's great. That's perfect. That gives me hope that when I'm doing an accent and absolutely bombing and every single time I say a word, I'm just like, oh my God, Maisie, shut the fuck up. That it can still be entertaining. But I just think that I was just like, the accent is wrong, obviously, and that's fine. That I get the character, great. So then it feels like it's like... it's like Mark Ruffalo is like aware of the fact that he's playing this character. That's just how it feels, which is fine because all of the locations are sets and like it's an absurd story. And so, like, there's a beauty in, like, the meta of that, right? But I do just think that it looks like he is not having a good time up there.
I get that so much with films where I'm like, that is my ick when I see somebody acting. And obviously we're seeing, like, that is the most that you could see somebody trying to play a role ever. Yeah. But for some reason, it was entertaining and I was just having a really good time.
I think it did just work because, like you say, it's all so over the top. And, like, it's meant to be ridiculous. So, I even realise that it was a bad accent? Or did I just think that it was a completely different accent that wasn't even meant to be English?
I thought it was a choice.
I've actually spoken to other people who have seen this movie and they love, love, love his performance in it. I think that people are, on the whole, going to really love his performance in it. I just couldn't. I don't know. I felt like this.
Oh shit, that's not good, is it?
Yeah, but that's fine.
No, like, I like, kind of love that you felt that.
Imagine he wins an Oscar. That's iconic. That's cool. He should really then write a book about acting. Yeah. And being outside of your comfort zone. Because that's the crazy thing, is like, you can do something that makes you so uncomfortable that you're cringing at because it goes against everything that you ever dreamt of yourself as an actor, and you can do probably like one of the most cool characters of your whole career. So I think even though I'm saying this, it's not actually to like dig him. Like, I think it's really interesting that despite all of this, we're still sitting and chatting about his character in a way that's not like, ugh, get off the screen. Because it's not. I know it's not, but it's like, yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
I just find conversations like this so exciting because it's like different people's perceptions. And the only way potentially that you would understand a different version of like what we've seen just in this threesome here.
Careful.
is because you know what it's like to be there and we don't. Yeah. Like, we just go do the thing, great, be in the film, or do this in the film, or we watch a performance, but we would never know how it is to actually like be self-conscious and exposed and bare.
Being an actor of his caliber and being like so self-conscious on set, like, that is a terrifying thought. And like, I think one that happens to so many actors. People always talk about like the more that they do, the more self-conscious and nervous they get before they start a job. But I really, really feel inspired by the fact that you two both like love it. That's cool.
What did you think of the dancing scene?
Bave.
Yeah.
So good.
Does it beat the favourite with Joe Alwyn and Rachel Weisz? Yeah.
For me, yes.
This one was better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed, actually. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. The way she steps into it, like, just, and the camera as well, following her, just everything. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. Just like a real favourite scene. My favourite dance scene from a movie, actually, I don't know if I want to say it's my favourite, but the one that sticks with me a lot is in Ex Machina, when Eva and the guy are like dancing together to like the disco music. I love that scene. I'm not going to say that's my favourite dance scene of all time. That was a stupid thing to say, but that's like one of my recent favourites, but this is like just topped it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's great. Okay, so... do you two, like, obviously this film is like very heavily about sex, which I had no idea about from watching the trailer.
Neither.
Do you think that it portrays a woman who has autonomy over her body or over her sexuality?
The big cues.
Yeah, I was like, or what did you just feel? Did you think much about the sex?
I thought a lot about the sex. Yeah.
I was thinking for days.
Yeah. I don't know. When we first start seeing, so that's when it goes into colour, right? When she first has sex.
Oh, I hadn't noticed. I thought it was just when she gets to Lisbon.
That's like a very different time. You know what? Don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's when she first has sex.
That makes sense. Yeah. Her world is now in colour.
When she goes away, So we're both right. They go away, and then that's when she has sex for the first time, I think, in that room with the four poster bed.
Right. Yeah, she hasn't had sex before that point, but she's touched like herself at the table.
With an apple, though.
With herself.
With an apple, by the way.
With an apple?
Yeah.
Yes. Interesting.
I don't.
Interesting apparatus. No.
Apparatus. I'm pretty sure that's when it goes into colour, but I might be wrong.
When she's at the table?
No, when she has sex.
No, I think when she was at her own house, there was some colour. When she was at Willem Dafoe's house. Actual Willem Dafoe.
I found it quite jarring to start that she's playing this childlike character and it's very sexualized.
Yeah.
When all we've seen of her is her being very infantile. But obviously there is a reason behind that with how she progresses through the film, and that it's the fact that she's becoming a woman or whatever. But I wasn't expecting it, but I loved it by the end, but I didn't like it initially.
Yeah. It's a really strong point that, like, it's a babe. It's like a bit fucked up. It's a baby's brain in a woman's body, and then I mean, I'm presuming that we're like, okay, the brain just like developed really quick, but it is in a way like it's a bit weird.
This, you're putting Emma Stone in that position, but she is infantilized, and it's just the hands that something like this can get into. But however, if we could live in a world where you could make something like this, because it's like, it is a really interesting take on like this young woman, baby lady.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's such a, I mean, that's the sort of thing that Yorgos Lanthimos is like really good at doing. And I think that he like really towed the line and like did it in a good way, I think. But yeah, it's like really fucking risky, and it's like such a hard conversation to have. And it's like, at what point are we censoring too much, and at what point are we creating things that's like in the wrong hands is really dangerous. And like, you know, like it's just the kind of fucked up world we live in, where it's like very hard to make something that's super risque without it becoming, yeah, just like really problematic.
Yeah. I just wonder if it was a conversation that they made it with Film 4 and Searchlight, who I think are like, they make incredible films and they're obviously very careful about the things that they do. Film 4 literally just made How to Have Sex. Like they're making, they're very like progressive. Mm-hmm. But I just hope that that was a conversation that was had. And I wonder what was said.
Yeah, to be a fly on the wall.
The thing that I found it jarring, because I think just a few scenes before, when Mark Ruffalo's character is speaking to her in the wardrobe, and she's like in her child bedroom, and it's being predatory to take her away. She's still very childlike when she's in that cupboard in her child's bedroom. They've hidden away in her cupboard. He's taken away from her carer. And then it wasn't that long after that they were having this rampant sex. And it was like, this is about her becoming a woman and having her autonomy over a body to like explore sexuality. But it felt predatory the way that she was taken away from the house, because she didn't understand it. So it like dances that line of like, she's exploring herself and he's, I think both of those things are the true. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's not predatory, and I don't think she's not got autonomy.
Yeah, because I suppose as it progresses, like, then she does fully have autonomy.
Yeah, I think to answer your question, I think yes.
Yeah, but by the end.
By the end, yeah. Oh, for sure, yeah. By the end.
She has autonomy over her whole life by the end, really.
Well, kind of the whole way through. I think he just believes he has power over her.
That's true.
But he's
all of the
one...
men think that they have power over her, but maybe none of them ever do.
Exactly. I don't think that she ever is not in control.
That's true.
Throughout the whole film, I think people just are projecting onto her what they think she means and that she's theirs. Mm. But I think at every point, even when she's like decides to go, she's like, I'm going to fuck this guy in Lisbon.
See ya.
And she does.
Yeah.
And then he's all like, I've got her forever. But he doesn't. It's just his warped view of her. Hey, I'm liking this film more and more and more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, just wanted to chat a little bit about the shooting style.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's just like bonkers.
Real bonkers.
And I wondered if there were just like any parts that you picked up on that you did particularly like, and no problem if you didn't.
Sometimes when it was like the full fisheye, I was like, my eyes, I can't focus. But then it's like, it was fun, wasn't it? And then like, whenever he burped a big bubble, I was like, oh, like, I feel like it's all mirroring it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, why not? Right. But no, I didn't love it for any other reason than why not?
Yeah.
I didn't go like, oh, I get it. I would be lying if I said, yeah, I really know what he meant to do there. Like what he was trying to do with the fisheye. I have no idea, but it was like cool. So I'm like, okay.
does the burp bubble mean anything?
I don't know if it's a thing from the book or something. No, but it's just because it's like the fisheye and then he would like also burp a bubble that I was like, I feel like there's this... I see a circle in the frame. I see that the frame is now a circle.
I'm putting two and two together.
Because I'm a genius. But yeah, I mean, oh, and the circle of her sleeves.
It's all linked.
And the apple. Like, it must be linked somehow. But I would just be, like, completely making it up on the spot if I had told you why.
Yeah. No, I feel like I love all like the mad different things that he does, but agree that I don't
know
why. No, I wouldn't know why. I wouldn't also if like I was starting to try research bits of it and I was like, I don't know what any of this means. But the one thing that I do find interesting is, you know, the fish, it wasn't even fish eye, there was like a porterhole type thing. And that was something that apparently he'd bring out whenever he like felt that like the scene wasn't it, they could just get more out of the scene than like the porterhole. It was like a 4 mil something would come out. And then there was a joke. There was a joke on set that if the actors just like weren't doing very well, then it'd be like, let's get the 4 mil out.
Yeah. Oh god.
Mark Ruffalo's on.
Shit. Oscar Isaac, just cut in a minute.
Get him in. But yeah.
That's so funny. What a good technique.
Yeah. Mm. So to kind of finish us off here, I went on Letterboxd to look at some of the reviews. And I'm just going to tell you some of them. So Sarah gave it 4.5 stars and said, this is Barbie if Weird Barbie was the lead. And I thought that was great.
Oh, yeah. That's so good.
Yeah. So maybe that's why we all love it.
Yeah.
That's what we wanted. You just wanted a Weird Barbie film.
Yeah.
I do want a Weird Barbie film.
Yeah, they should do... If they were going to do a sequel, they should do it about Weird Barbie.
They so should.
The origin of Weird Barbie.
Yeah, because then she's hilarious, isn't it?
And Emma Stone could play her as a baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Maria E. Gates gave it 2.5 stars and said, don't know yet what I'm going to rate this because I did enjoy it, but I don't know how you do all of what this film does and never once show menstrual blood. Which at first I was like, huh, interesting. And then I thought, yeah, but it is a dead woman's body who probably no longer has periods.
Hang on. Backtrack. Let's take it back.
So...
She said, having a like, lot of sex and she's never having a period.
Right.
And there's like never a period.
Yeah, but you don't see the genitalia. So why would you have seen blood?
I think maybe she'd just be like, oh my God, I am bleeding, which I get. But then I'm also just don't think that that experiment, like she had a baby pulled out and I'm like,
maybe the womb.
I feel like
women.
There's an excuse for her not to have periods.
Oh, okay. I was just trying to think how and why would you do that? But then maybe it could be like she's a child and she's trying to understand what this is. So it could have been in there, but
yeah.
Yeah.
An interesting point.
Mm, very.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts, any final thoughts on Poor Things?
I want that wardrobe. I want that wardrobe all day, every day. And I want that hair too.
Yeah. I want that bedroom and house and all the sets. I just... Oh my God. And the sex.
Great.
Yeah.
I love this film. I've not been as excited to speak about a film as this one for a long time. Mm. And actually having the conversation, it went in a much more exciting direction than I even thought it was going to go in. I think Yorgos Lanthimos is definitely one of my favourite directors. And he's doing another project with Emma Stone.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's already shot. I think it's in post. Cool.
Yeah. Wow. Do you know anything about it?
No. Just that. Oh yeah, Emma Stone was a producer on this as well, by the way. You might have already known that. And so, sure.
Bravo.
Go her.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see that, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great. Well, this has been great.
Yay. Fabulous.
Yeah. Same time next week. Thank you. This was lovely. Next week, we will be back with more Frank Film Club.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode. Next week, we're speaking about everyone's hot topic over Christmas time, I feel. Saltburn, directed by Emerald Fennell. You can go and watch it on Amazon Prime, so make sure you go and do that. Enjoy the hell out of it and then come back here and we will chat about it next week.
Thank you so much for watching this video. I hope that you enjoyed. If you did enjoy, then please like and subscribe this channel and video. And let us know what you thought about the film as well in the comments. We'd love to know if you loved it, if you hated it. Yeah, tell us what you think.
This podcast was presented by Wrapped.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.